Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Saturday, June 18th. I'm your reader, Jim Hill. Well, first let's have a look at the weather for eastern Iowa. Today in the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City area, it will be sunny, the wind from the southeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour. We'll have a high of 81 and a low of 58. On Sunday, it'll be mostly sunny, the wind from the south at 10 to 20 miles per hour. We'll have a high of 89 and a low of 67. On Monday, sunny and hot. The wind from the south at 15 to 25 miles per hour. We'll have a high of 97 and a low of 74. On Tuesday, there's a chance of storms. It'll be hot. The wind from the south at 10 to 20 miles per hour. We'll have a high of 96 and a low of 69. The normal high for this day is 81, the normal low, 61. The record high was 99 in 1913. The record low was 46 in 1950. The sun will set tonight at 8:45. It will rise tomorrow at 5:31. We have a little weather story today, this one from meteorologist Corey Thompson. The atmospheric cap. Sometimes in the warm season, what otherwise would be a very favorable environment for thunderstorms turns out to produce nothing. Often this is because of something meteorologists call the cap. This is a layer of warmer air aloft that prevents air from rising to form clouds or storms. When air near the ground warms during the day, it naturally wants to rise. It will, and cools as it does, until it reaches surrounding air that is warmer than it. Then, in a relative sense, it will be cool air that will tend to sink, keeping it from developing into a storm. The cap can be broken with enough warming of the air near the ground or cooling of the warmer air aloft. Okay, and again, that little weather story is from meteorologist Corey Thompson. And now I'll turn to the front page for today's first story. This story appears under the headline, Reynolds Signs 2-Year Ban on Casino Licenses. Pause puts on ice the plans for $250 million Cedar Rapids Casino. And the story is by Aaron Murphy and Marissa Payne of the Gazette. There will be no casino in Cedar Rapids for at least 2 years after Governor Kim Reynolds signed into law Friday a provision that places a moratorium on new casino licenses. An amendment to a larger gambling bill means regulators cannot issue any new licenses in Iowa, including plans for a potential $250 million, 160,000 square foot entertainment and cultural arts complex at the site of now demolished Cooper's Mill near downtown Cedar Rapids until late June 2024. Citing gambling fatigue, the Republican-led Iowa legislature this year approved the 2-year moratorium on new casinos, essentially taking action on a matter that traditionally has been conducted by the state's Racing and Gaming Commission. The moratorium was inserted into House File 2497, a larger bill on state gambling regulations, in the waning days of the 2022 session. Senator Robbie Smith, a Republican from Davenport, which already has a casino, ran the amendment for the moratorium. Cedar Rapids Mayor Tiffany O'Donnell said she spoke with Reynolds and the governor. The governor understands signing the bill into law is a disappointing decision, quote, for me as mayor and for the city. Quote, I expressed to her my disappointment and reassured her that Cedar Rapids would still be here when the moratorium is lifted in 2 years, said O'Donnell, who had asked the governor to veto the bill. She encouraged us to stay the course as she and others pay attention to the gaming industry. Whether or not to extend the moratorium once it sunsets in 2 years is a decision for Iowa lawmakers, O'Donnell said, but it's Cedar Rapids' job to ensure the state understands what a benefit it will be to have a casino in Iowa's second largest city. The Cedar Crossing Casino proposal calls for bars, restaurants, and a 1,500 capacity entertainment center and other venues on F Avenue Northwest along the west side of the Cedar River between Kingston Village and Time Check Park. And pardon me. The project near the Cedar River also would incorporate a flood wall. Quote, the city remains committed to bringing this world-class entertainment venue to Cedar Rapids, O'Donnell said. Pardon me. Our citizens deserve a place to find a wide range of entertainment options, and we know it will spur growth around it. Pardon me, I'm going to have a sip of coffee. All right. It remains a priority of the city to work alongside the developer to get it done. The new law jeopardizes Cedar Rapids' third try for a casino. The Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission previously denied a gaming license to Linn County in 2014 and 2017, both times citing studies showing it would cannibalize revenues from other casinos, particularly Riverside Casino and Golf Course in Washington County. Jonathan Swain, president of Peninsula Pacific Entertainment, Cedar Rapids' preferred casino operating company, said last month, when state lawmakers passed the moratorium, that local investors in the project believe that as long as they are patient, the outcome will be positive. The bill would not sway their commitment to building a Linn County casino, he said. City Manager Jeff Pomerantz noted the developer's commitment to bringing this proposal forward to state regulators once the moratorium sunsets. Quote, Jonathan Swain and the investors have a very significant financial commitment for this project, Pomerantz said. At this time, the city has every intention of supporting the project and the investors by earmarking the property for a future casino development. The Iowa Gaming Association, which represents Iowa's 19 state-licensed casinos, supports the moratorium, according to the group's president and chief executive officer, Wes Enrique. But the moratorium seems to put Reynolds, pardon me, at odds with the five-member panel she appoints to regulate state gaming industry. Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission members earlier this month said they were disappointed and surprised by the moratorium and felt the regulatory commission process kept politics out of licensing decisions. Quote, my concern is if this is signed, politics is now in Iowa's gaming industry. Commissioner Lance Horbach, a former Republican lawmaker from Tama, said at the commission's June 2nd meeting in Emmitsburg. Cedar Rapids casino backers, pardon me, were hopeful the current commission would be receptive to a Linn County casino, as previous opponents had cycled off the panel. Some Iowa lawmakers who opposed the moratorium feared it would give an opening for neighboring states, Nebraska and Illinois, to further expand their gaming industries. Cedar Rapids gaming interests believed the time was right for Iowa to compete with the nearby markets by awarding a license for a Linn County casino. In 2 years, O'Donnell said, there could be a new slate of commissioners, and the gaming landscape itself may change. Quote, we have to be prepared for all of it, O'Donnell said. Oh, just pardon me, I'm going to have another sip of coffee. All right. Well, we have this story from the front page of today's Gazette. State City award millions for Sub-Zero to expand. Manufacturing facility adding 192 full-time jobs in Cedar Rapids. And the story is by Marissa Payne of the Gazette. Wisconsin-based refrigeration and high-end appliance company Sub-Zero this week was awarded millions in city and state incentives to build a $140.6 million light manufacturing facility in Cedar Rapids that would add nearly 200 full-time jobs and bring a new company to Iowa. The Iowa Economic Development Authority Board Friday unanimously awarded $202.5 million in investment tax credits and sales and use tax credits to Sub-Zero to build a 400,000 square foot building at 10015 6th Street Southwest near the Eastern Iowa Airport. The state also approved giving Sub-Zero a $1.13 million forgivable loan at the end of a 7-year contract period, contingent on the local match of a 20-year 75% tax break on the increment value generated by the project. Okay, and pardon the delay. An estimated net present value of $15.4 million. The Cedar Rapids City Council approved those incentives this week, subject to meeting employment thresholds. A term sheet outlining preliminary points of a deal with the company calls for a minimum investment of $90 million in property and improvements and $50.6 million in machinery and equipment. Once built, the project will result in the creation of 192 full-time jobs, 127 of which would be paid at or above the high quality rate of $24.20 an hour. The development would add more than $11.8 million to the annual payroll in the community, according to the city. Work is expected to start in August 2023 and wrap up by August 2025. Sub-Zero will begin hiring in the fourth quarter of 2022, according to the IEDA. But the company has until December 2026 to reach the employment threshold required to receive incentives. Quote, this is a major accomplishment for the city, City Manager Jeff Pomerantz recently told the Gazette. We feel very excited about welcoming Sub-Zero to our community. They're going to be a great employer for the city, and we look forward to a long relationship with them. This is a major step to bring this company to our city. Scott Waring, the Senior Vice President of Operations and Product Design for Sub-Zero, said this week, the third-generation family-owned company has three large manufacturing plants around the United States that have burgeoned and are full. Sub-Zero has three brands, Sub-Zero Refrigerators, Wolf Ovens, and Ranges, and Cove Dishwashers. Quote, we are seeking a new location to add footprint that essentially will give us the next leg of our journey, Waring Waring said. He said the city offers an incredible package financially and with a people-centered community and business climate that made a compelling case for Sub-Zero to locate here. We're excited about it because we believe it's a phenomenal fit for us, for you in terms of the culture, who you are, who we are, Waring said. We're excited about the manufacturing base and focus that you all have continued to build upon and expand. City Economic Development Manager Caleb Mason said staff will bring a development agreement forward to council in August. Quote, Cedar Rapids makes stuff, and we've always made stuff from the time of our founding, Council Member Scott Overland said this week. It's a huge welcome to Sub-Zero to join the myriad of companies in Cedar Rapids that make stuff. Site selection consultants for Sub-Zero first reached out last December, Mason said. The city and other partners, including the IEDA, Cedar Rapids Metro Economic Alliance, Alliant Energy, and Kirkwood Community College, collaborated on site visits and efforts to recruit the company. Private sector business leaders also championed the region during those visits. Economic Alliance Executive Director Doug Newman said in a news release. So many people are involved in an effort like this, Newman said. Congratulations to all on this success. It demonstrates again the importance of constantly pursuing business attraction and business expansion projects to keep our economy marching forward. The addition of Sub-Zero marks the third consecutive year Cedar Rapids has landed a project exceeding $100 million, all located in the rapidly growing southwest quadrant. Cedar Rapids has attracted growing manufacturing, warehousing and logistics, and distribution companies, among others, in this part of town, thanks to easy access to the airport and the rail and highway networks. The other major investments nearby slated to wrap up this year include a $108.6 million, 479,000-square-foot FedEx Ground Distribution Center on Commerce Park Drive Southwest, as well as a 200,000-square-foot classified defense aerospace facility worth more than $170 million from multinational aerospace company BAE Systems. To accommodate growth stemming from these projects and new housing construction, the Iowa Department of Transportation earlier this week accelerated plans to reconfigure an interchange at Interstate 380 and Wright Brothers Boulevard Southwest. And with that, I will pause for a second and have another sip of coffee. All right, let's see what else we have here. on the Iowa Today page, we have this story. Group leads discussion on blackness and belonging in Iowa City. And the story is by Hannah Pinsky of the Gazette. Around 15 people gathered in Iowa City on Thursday night for an open discussion about the culture of public art and how it serves the black community. Quote, Blackness and Belonging was led by Public Space One's Oracles of Iowa City team and supported by the Iowa Arts Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. The community conversations are being held after the Oracles of Iowa City artists completed murals on the south side of the old Capitol parking ramp, talking about community participation. Oracles of Iowa City is a mural project conceived by the Center for Afrofuturist Studies at Public Space One and funded by University of Iowa, Office of the Vice President of Research, and the City of Iowa City. The project was in partnership with Antoine Williams and Dante K. Hayes, two black artists who wanted to conceptualize a visual call-out about black people's experiences living in Iowa City. Uchi Anomnachi, a fellow of the Public Space One Center for African Studies, led Thursday's talk and wanted to focus on making connections and engagements with the black community about how people feel about the future of public art. Lois Arthur, a University of Iowa associate professor and member of the Iowa City Public Art Advisory Committee, said the committee decided to have a mural in downtown Iowa City because of the public art that was coming out of the George Floyd murder and protests around the country. Arthur worked with Public Space One before the mural and thought they would be a perfect partner because of their activist program. After the kickoff in September, Anomnachi said the Oracles of Iowa City team started the conversations for community feedback and for people to feel like they're part of the process. The previous conversation, Anomnachi said, was about discussing community feedback about the impact of the murals and how they would have used the space. Quote, "Our last conversation posed the question to attendees, what would you have done with the space to see if people were satisfied with the way these murals use downtown and the dimensions of the parking ramp?" Anomnachi said. "We gave people cards that have similar dimensions and asked them to show us in a brief workshop and discussed how we use space. Arthur hopes these conversations help extend the Oracles of Iowa City's mission and include a variety of members in the community." Arthur said, quote, "One of the things that we wanted to do as a team was make sure that we follow up so that the mural is not enough just to keep things functioning. And so whatever we can do to keep these conversations going and finding ways to include different people, what they're saying about things is also what's going on this series of talks." Okay. All right. Now I'll turn a few pages here and here I am on the Insight page of the Gazette, and we have first of the Gazette's editorial, Stand Up for Gun Compromise. Iowa Republican Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst are taking a wait-and-see approach to a potential bipartisan package of gun safety measures. The package, negotiated by a bipartisan group of 20 senators, would provide states with grants to enact red flag laws, keeping guns out of the hands of people who are judged to be a threat to themselves and others. It would expand background checks to cover juvenile records for gun buyers under 21 and would close the boyfriend loophole by banning gun purchases by people convicted of domestic abuse in dating relationships, among other provisions. The measures have yet to be drafted into legislation. Ernst and Grassley say they want to see the final details before deciding how to vote. That seems reasonable on the surface, but given the senators' records on guns, it also seems like a prelude to opposition. Grassley is seeking re-election this fall and has opposed gun safety measures in the past. Ernst has received more than $3 million in campaign donations from the National Rifle Association, over her political career. She opposed closing the boyfriend loophole as part of the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act. But this is a critical moment. We've seen the massacres in a Buffalo grocery store and at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. In Iowa, a gunman killed two women outside an Ames church. He had been charged with harassing one of the women after a breakup. The cry of enough is enough is resonating across the nation, allowing the latest wave of mass shootings to pass without any action to make these tragedies less likely is not an acceptable outcome. The Senate compromise is tenuous. Support from senators such as Grassley and Ernst for these modest proposals would prove vital to making sure the deal doesn't collapse like so many other similar efforts. The most important details the senators need to know is the list of innocent victims gunned down in stores, schools, churches, and countless other public venues. It's no time to replay to the same old politics over guns. It's time for Ernst and Grassley to stand up to the violence plaguing our nation and support the compromise. It's time to show some courage in the face of American carnage. And again, that is the Gazette's editorial. And now, I will drop down a bit to community letters. And today there's just one letter. This from David Sheets of Marion. Listen to lies and reject those who tell them. We live in a nation that does not appreciate silence. So many of the charlatans that hold our democracy hostage with lies and false witness would blink out into irrelevance if met with silence. Our political parties draw strength from having an opponent to fight. Our political parties draw strength from having an opponent to fight. If the Democratic Party evaporated, the Republican Party would soon dissolve from irrelevance. We, the people, need to cultivate a culture where liars, conmen, demagogues, and the generally dishonorable are ignored, both in the media and at the ballot box. That requires people to do two things. Stop watching media that uses these people to sell commercials, and stop voting for a person primarily as a way of keeping the other person out of office. If we continue to vote for the lesser of two evils, our sorrows will continue to multiply. Yesterday, it was the political contamination of the pandemic response. Today, it is the political contamination of mitigating gun violence. Yesterday, it was abandoning Afghanistan. Today, it is the slow death of Ukraine. Things get worse when our elected servants don't get better. No logical person would argue that the trend from Bush to Obama to Trump to Biden is one of improving ability and performance. All of them trade on the fact that people who cannot tolerate silence don't think about the lies they are told. Our society must cultivate a culture of listening, because listeners think about the lies they are told and reject the people who tell them. And again, that letter is from David Sheets of Marion. All right, let's see. What else do we have here? Well, we have also on the inside page of the Gazette this editorial by Jennifer Rubin, who is a columnist at the Washington Post. And this column, I assume, appeared earlier in the Post. It is not hard to break up with Trump. So many Republicans, exemplified by the invertebrate House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California, continue to debase themselves in defending defeated former President Donald Trump, despite his attempt to overthrow our democracy. In turn, mainstream media outlets shrug their shoulders at the sycophancy and deep dishonesty. What do you expect, they effectively argue? It's just politics. It is just that sort of cynicism. Republicans abiding contempt for voters and the media's irresponsible indifference to anything but horse race politics that leaves America vulnerable to the return of Trump and Republican authoritarian rule. If it's all a game and no one is expected to do the right thing, then why not reject the lying MAGA crowd pleasers? Aside from the moral nihilism, the Trump sycophants and the media overestimate how hard it is to break with the leader of the insurrection. Some conservatives do it without batting an eye. Arkansas Republican Governor Asa Hutchinson essentially told off his spineless fellow Republicans for continuing to support Trump in an interview Sunday with Brett Beyer of Fox News. Quote, Republicans need to do a lot of soul searching as to what is the right thing here and what is the right thing for our democracy in the future, and not simply adhere to the basic instincts of some of our base. Hutchinson added that, quote, Trump is politically, morally responsible for much of what has happened, but in terms of criminal liability, I think the committee has a long way to go before they could establish that. It is not clear why Hutchinson can't seem to grasp the facts of the conspiracy to defraud the United States and to disrupt proceedings in Congress to certify electoral votes, but at least he refuses to play along with the big lie. Too bad Arkansas Republican Senators Tom Cotton and John Boozman have not the decency to follow his lead. You might argue that it's easier for Hutchinson to criticize Trump since he is term-limited from seeking re-election. But there are Republicans in deep red states who are seeking re-election and refuse to pander to the MAGA base or defend Trump. Representative Don Bacon, Republican of Nebraska, who voted for the independent commission to investigate the insurrection, declared on NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday that Trump's actions on January 6 were wrong and that Trump would not be his pick in 2024. Bacon declared, "We have to learn the lesson. Why did we lose in 2020? It was the comportment and temperament." He also agreed with the suggestion that Trump was guilty of dereliction of duty. Bacon went further, saying he would not dismiss out of hand a criminal indictment of Trump. Despite these views, Bacon won more than 80% of the vote in his primary contest last month. It is not hard for Republicans to admit the obvious, to stop pandering to the deluded MAGA base, and to acknowledge that Trump betrayed his oath. Yet the timorous McCarthy, not to mention the ridiculously ambitious crew of 2024 contenders, cannot manage even that. All praise is due to Representative Liz Cheney, Republican of Wyoming, who has already earned her place in history. But the question remains, why is the rest of her party so cowardly? And again, that column is by Jennifer Rubin, who is a syndicated columnist. All right, let's see what else we have here. You're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Saturday, June 18th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now let's turn to today's obituaries. All right. Well, first we have a few short notices here. From Cedar Rapids, George W. Fields, Jr., 74, died Friday, June 17th. The Papik Kuba Funeral Home of Cedar Rapids is handling the arrangements. From West Liberty, Samuel E. Schneider, 78, died Thursday, June 16th. The Henderson Barker Funeral Home of West Liberty is handling the arrangements. Frederick Bartles, 84, of Bentendorf, formerly of Bryant, died Tuesday, June 14th. The Carson Celebration of Life Center of Maquoketa is handling the arrangements. And now we'll move on to the longer notices. From Cedar Rapids, Laura Leigh Hotz, that's spelled H-O-T-Z, 57, passed away recently. There's no date given. Laura would like you to celebrate her life with her family from 4 to 10 p.m. on July 1st at Thomas Park in Marion. From Cedar Rapids, Becky Ann Bartels, 64, of Cedar Rapids. Becky Ann Bartels, 64, of Cedar Rapids, passed away on June 14th at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House, surrounded by her loving family. There will be a visitation from 9:30 to 11 a.m. with a service to follow on Thursday, June 23rd, at New City Church in Cedar Rapids. From North Liberty, Gary William Metz, that's spelled M-E-T-Z, passed away June 13th. Per his wishes, no visitation or public service will be held. From Marshalltown, Lieutenant Colonel Rodney Peter Schultz, 76, died peacefully on February 27th, surrounded by his family at the Iowa Veterans Home in Marshalltown, where as Lieutenant Colonel, he held the highest military rank of any resident in the facility. Rodney's cremains will be placed in the columbarium next to his wife at the New Ulm City Cemetery in New Ulm, Minnesota. From Iowa City, Honorable Carl D. Baker, 75, died peacefully at his home surrounded by his family following a courageous battle with cancer on Friday, June 10th. A massive Christian burial will be celebrated at 11 a.m. Friday, June 24th. At the Newman Center in Iowa City. The family will greet friends from 9:30 to 11 a.m. prior to the service. Burial will be at a later date in Grimes, Iowa. From Victor, Ruth Quinn, 86, of Victor, died on Wednesday, June 15th, at Brooklyn Community Estate in Brooklyn. A funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, June 20th, at St. James Lutheran Church in Victor. Interment will be at Victor Memorial Cemetery. A luncheon will follow at the Victor American Legion. Visitation with the family present will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. Sunday, June 19th, at the Smith Funeral Home in Victor. From Cedar Rapids, Thomas D. Schumacher, 78, died peacefully on June 15th at County House Residence after a long illness. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, June 20th at King of Kings Lutheran Church in Cedar Rapids with Pastor Rich Belvance officiating. Interment will be at St. Stephen's Lutheran Cemetery near Atkins, Iowa. Visitation will be held Father's Day, Sunday, June 19th, from 4 to 7 p.m. at King of Kings Lutheran Church in Cedar Rapids. Memorials may be directed to King of Kings Lutheran Church. And finally, Esther C. Smith Little, 99, passed away on Wednesday, June 15th, at Unity Point Health Hospital in Marshalltown. Private family graveside services will be held at a later date. All right. Now I will turn to the sports page of the Gazette and see what we can find here. Okay. Well, here's a little story. High school golf. Nure Messenger win Optimist titles. Cedar Rapids Xavier junior Garrett Nure and Cedar Rapids Washington junior Maya Messenger won the top age divisions at the Cedar Rapids Optimist Junior Golf Association event Friday at Airport National Golf Course. Nure carded a 65 to top Kennedy senior Brody Gilkson by two strokes in the boys' 15 to 18 division. Messenger shot 75 to beat Hayden May by two strokes on the girls' side. All right. I'm going to pause for a moment to have a sip of coffee. All right. High school baseball. Clear Creek Amana's Swales returns for breakout season. Freak injury put damper on his junior season. And the story is by K.J. Pilcher of the Gazette. Clear Creek Amana's Ben Swales expected last summer to be his breakout season. Unfortunately, plans were placed on hold after a freak accident, slicing his hand with a knife as he cut batting tape off the handle. Swales had surgery and returned to base run for teammates. Quote, for the first 90% of the season, I had to do game changer on the iPad because I couldn't use my thumb at all, Swales said about the injury to the flexor tendon of his glove hand thumb. Thankfully, I got the chance to base run at the end of the year. I got to wear one of those sliding mitts. I got a chance to steal some bases and score some runs last year. It was very disappointing. Swales has produced a banner senior campaign. He ranks among the offensive leaders in Class 3A. He is second in 3A with 34 RBIs and tied for second with 5 home runs. His .517 batting average is good for third, while his 30 hits are fifth best in 3A. Not bad for the multi-sport standout, who was the starting quarterback for the Clippers playoff football team. Averaged 19 points per game in basketball and qualified for the state track and field meet. Thursday night, he reached base all 4 times, earned the win in relief in the nightcap, and scored the go-ahead run to help the 7th-ranked Clippers sweep center point Urbana in a WAMAC conference doubleheader. Clear Creek Amana won the opener 5-4 and the nightcap 6-4. Swales suffered 2 straight challenging seasons with COVID-19 impacting his sophomore year. He's determined to make this one to remember. Quote, I knew it had to be a comeback year, Swales said. I had to start strong and continue that to finish strong. The output is a product of his work throughout the year. He possesses a passion for baseball, squeezing in batting practice during other seasons. Swales said, quote, "Baseball is a year-round thing for me. I wish I could physically play all year round. That's not how it works. So I play other sports and excel in those. That's really important for me." All right. a tickle in the throat this morning. All right. Let's see what we have. Well, I will turn to the back page of today's Gazette for the Dear Abby column. Grown child wants mom to move past divorce. Dear Abby, when my sibling and I were 6 and 10, our parents told us they were getting a divorce because dad had an affair. Mom was, to say the least, incredibly hurt. Her hurt and resentment haven't subsided to this day. Dad has never apologized, but he has supported her financially ever since. Mom has tried therapy, but the minute a therapist upsets her, she stops going. My parents now live near my sister to help care for her twins. Mom is constantly upset with things Dad does. I don't want to seem insensitive, but they have now been divorced longer than they were married. It's exhausting, and it is starting to feel like we are enabling her. Is there something I can say to communicate that it's way past time to be over this, but in a nicer way that may be helpful and maybe won't leave her too much room to tell me I'm victim-blaming? And this letter is signed, What's Past Has Passed. Dear What's Past, that your mother has been unable to move beyond the divorce and quits therapy the minute a therapist says something she doesn't want to hear is sad. Some people cling to their victimhood for comfort. It buffers them from having to recognize their own contribution to their failure. For your own sake, when your mother starts complaining about your father, change the subject. Let me begin that sentence again. I'll try to get through it without coughing. For your own sake, when your mother starts complaining about your father, change the subject in the conversation or tune out. Enabling her isn't helping either of you. And that is the Dear Abby column for the day. Now let's see what else we have here. Well, we have this story from the living page of the Gazette. Legacies take flight. Marion history enthusiast creates tribute to Iowa's ace fighter pilot's aircraft. And the story is by Elijah Deschutes of the Gazette. David Wendell's biggest hobby began at age 3, when he watched a plane crash with a ball of fire at what was then the Cedar Rapids Municipal Airport. Admiral Ernie Christensen, a pilot for the U.S. Navy Blue Angels, crashed his No. 4 Phantom jet after a grave error, but survived. Quote, "The fire of that crash lit in me a flame for aviation that will never be extinguished," said Wendell, who was sitting on his father's shoulders as the scene unfolded. A lifetime later, Wendell boasts that he believes is one of the world's largest collections of model fighter airplanes, complete with signatures of the pilots who flew them. Amassing model planes and doing research started in earnest after Wendell, now 55, saw the first Top Gun movie at a special showing in 1986, where Admiral Admiral Jeremiah Denton spoke of his daunting experiences as a fighter pilot during the Vietnam War. Pardon me. After being shot down and held as a prisoner of war alongside others like John McCain, Denton became famous for blinking the word torture in Morse code during a televised interview. While some viewers walked away from the movie thinking about Tom Cruise's good looks and smooth moves, Wendell walked away with a reinforced appreciation for pilots and aviators he had held since childhood. When his father would bring home retired planes instruments from his job at Collins. As the historian and former owner of a living history museum in Chicago researched the aviation hobby more, a new spark pushed Wendell to identify dozens of Iowa's ace fighter pilots, previously not well known to the public. When he discovered Colonel William Reed, the highest scoring Iowa fighter pilot to die in the line of duty, was from Marion, he thought it was a misprint. Quote, I figured if there was one in my own backyard I didn't know about, how many could there be? There were 40, as it turned out. But Wendell's research, done mostly before the internet, was the primary means of research, doesn't just sit in report compilations or books. He has 365 model planes around his home, most of which he can identify in detail with a glance. Pardon me. He'll tell you all about the F-18 by the window, a model of the plane flown in Top Gun Maverick this year and signed by a retired astronaut. He'll recite the significance of the P-38 Lightning flown by Colonel Rex Barber, the World War II pilot who shot down Isoroku Yamamoto, the Japanese admiral, who planned the attack on Pearl Harbor. He'll glow when talking about his model P-51 signed by Brigadier General Chuck Yeager, one of the more recognized names among fighter pilots. All were heroes he sought out to meet. His living room displays are only a sampling of what he has, much of which is stacked floor-to-ceiling in boxes in the basement. To him, the collection is not a compilation of wood and paint. It's an assimilation of values he hopes to push into the future, as 20th century history grows more distant to future generations. Quote, these aircraft with their signatures embody the traditional values that every one of these pilots and aviators represented in serving our country around the world, Wendell said. When they're no longer around, that model will be there to tell their story. What's more is that over the years, Wendell has managed to bring history to life by touring classrooms and bringing fighter planes to Cedar Rapids. In 2000, he organized a ceremony honoring Reed by flying in his wingman, Ken Jernstedt, as well as a P-40 fighter like the one they flew and a B-25 bomber like the ones they accompanied in missions over China. With a B-25, they dropped a wreath over Reed's grave in a low pass through an Anamosa cemetery, bringing honor to the man whose name hasn't been mentioned in more than 50 years since he had been killed in China. Jernstedt's eyes, by then blind, filled with tears, remembering his squadron mate. Those were the moments that made it worth propagating the names of Wendell's heroes forgotten in Iowa. The moments that made his hobby more of a passion than an obsession. Quote, "To me, there was no greater satisfaction than being able to tell the story of someone who otherwise their extraordinary accomplishment, their extraordinary accomplishments wouldn't have been known to the rest of the world," said Wendell, explaining a mentality that applied to his former role as a features reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. "Even if that extraordinary accomplishment was only in the eyes of the few, it makes them feel good to be recognized." Today, one of his most treasured models is the one that Christensen crashed, signed by Christensen years later. Wendell procured the model in a tribute to his father, who ignited his passion for aviation. But it didn't arrive in Marion before Wendell's father died in 2011. The collection, which went online at WendellAirAndSpaceMuseum.org in 2016, is dedicated to his father. Now, 36 years after the first Top Gun movie captivated audiences, he hopes the sequel resonates with younger audiences to push a mission of remembrance forward as they aspire to reach the same level of accomplishment as the legacies before them. Quote, "This film wasn't just connecting with people because of flying, it was connecting with people on an emotional level because of the people," Wendell said. "These airplanes aren't being flown by themselves, they're being flown by people." He also hopes his models will find a more visible home where they can assist in that mission. Wendell said, quote, "Pilots love to see the models of their own planes because it shows that their legacy will live beyond them. When they're no longer around, that model will be there to tell their story." Oh, well, that's a very nice article. Well, let's see. I think we've kind of come to the end of things here. Well, yes, and that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Saturday, June 18th. I'm your reader, Jim Hill. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening.